No Common Core, this is.
Good morning. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order. Sprung ahead March 9th. And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3026.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure establishes an 11-member task force on counseling services for injured workers. It's to study the need for and the processes for providing counseling services to injured workers. It requires the task force to submit a report and recommendations to the appropriate committee of the Legislative Assembly by September 15th of 2016, declares an emergency, and there are no amendments before you.
Thank you. So up we'll have Nan Heim and Mike Sullivan. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. My name is Nan Heim, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association of Orthopedic Surgeons in support of House Bill 3026. And before I explain why orthopedic surgeons support this mental health counseling bill, I want to make it clear that the members of our association who work with injured workers, and there are a lot of them, believe that Oregon has a very good workers' compensation system. It's well-constructed, very well-managed, and has good oversight from MLAC as well as from the legislature. That being said, a number of our members who work with injured workers have seen, even after they perform successful surgeries, they have patients who experience depression and anxiety that interferes with their recovery from surgery and impedes their ability to go back to work and to return to the lives that they led before they were injured. I think the best way to explain it, when I asked our president why we would be pursuing this bill, he said to me, because we can fix their bones, but we cannot fix the depression and anxiety that some of them experience. Another orthopedist, when she heard about this bill, called me because she feels so strongly about it. She had a recent case where she performed surgery that was successful, but the patient was convinced that he could not return to do the same kind of work that he had, and he committed suicide. So she wanted me to know how strongly she supports this bill. We did try a little to come up with our own proposal for how this should be offered, but frankly, we don't have the expertise nor the data to do that. So we like this approach. We know that there needs to be some limits and some conditions. I can assure you that orthopedic surgeons have no interest in blowing a hole in the workers' compensation system, but they very much want a system that works for their patients. And with that, Mr. Chair, thank you for your consideration of this bill, and we urge your support.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the political director for Oregon for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. AWPPW supports anything that would make worker comp more friendly. The process can be difficult to navigate through. I'd like to give you some background on how this bill came about into counseling services. I had surgery last July, and my surgeon was Dr. Michael Keenan, who has served as the medical advisor to MLAC, and I asked him what he would like to see in worker comp to make it better, and he said psychological training. Comp can be real difficult, again, as I said, for people to get through, and it could lead to depression, which could lead to a chance of arguing with spouses over the lack of money, abusing drugs and alcohol, or both, and the ending cycle continues. To close, Mr. Chair, I'm thinking this is a very important bill, and I hope that everyone votes for it to pass. Thank you. I'll answer any questions that there might be.
Thank you. Questions of this panel? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, as I think of mental health, and I'm wondering on an accident, if the accident doesn't increase that issue, or whether, you know, or whether if the issue is already there before, or does it cause the issue of mental health after the accident? Does that make sense?
Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, the way I understand it from Dr. Keenan, this would be to the claim, the original claim. In other words, it wouldn't be a new claim on something other than the psychological problem came from the injury or was part of the injury. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, follow up.
Follow up.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking if someone had a mental health issue prior to the claim, that wouldn't necessarily come up as a state accident claim. You know, however, if they had a mental issue and then it was exacerbated by an accident, then it would become part of the claim. That's kind of what I...
Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, I've heard the term, and I think the bill uses the term, situational depression, which refers specifically to a depression that arises as a result of the injury and follow-up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions of this panel? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nan, thank you for coming by my office and bringing this to me. Had a little discussion, and Representative Kinnamer will understand this as well. It's almost thinking this bill kind of should be in healthcare a little bit, just because we're almost dealing like what we're doing with the CCO model of wraparound services for an injured worker, just to see where the mental state is and everything. And I understand what you're getting at here and everything. I'm just wondering if we had a chance to talk with anybody in the mental health field about this. And how the best way to go about it, because that's what we're going to run into, is basically SAFE being responsible for a little more on dealing with an injured worker, which, I mean, obviously these are people, because once I can't do something, I mean, I'm getting old enough, not quite as old as some of these other guys up here, but I still think I can.
Hey, can we have a reprimanded?
What did you just say?
But I can.
Yeah, no kidding. Widener, you're out
some
of order.
Some of us old people do not appreciate that.
My mind thinks my body can do things that it just can't do anymore. So, and I end up with torn muscles and things like that. And it is, I mean, it does affect you. And it's the same thing when you get hurt on the job and you think you can go back. A doctor's telling you think you can, and there's lots of physical therapy and things that go into that. So I'm just wondering if there isn't more wraparound services that we maybe should be looking at that when people do get injured on the job. So I can understand the need for a task force, but I think we need to be looking at very, very large picture when we're doing this, because it goes beyond the psychological evaluation. So I don't know if you got a chance to talk to anybody other than your own guys on this, or has it just been with the surgeons?
Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, I've had initial discussions, and in terms of what committee has the bill, I think I'm probably the oldest person here, and one thing I've learned over the years is I don't get involved in which committee bills go to.
Good point. And sometimes,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kinnamer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any discussions with IMLAC?
Chair Holvey, Representative Kinnamer, I have brought the bill to their attention. I don't think they have taken a formal position on it. I think they're going to hear it in a couple of weeks. But the initial discussion I had with one of the co-chairs was very favorable.
Thank you. Maybe we can get Teresa to come up just for a moment.
Kevin Willingham.
Oh, Kevin Willingham or Teresa Van Winkle, either one or both. Representative Esquivel, a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's not so much as this question as much as it is. I used to be a manager in wood products, and it does have an effect on people. Example, when you go visit someone and they've lost their leg from the kneecap down, or they've lost five toes, they've had them ripped off, or they've lost four fingers, yeah, there's depression there, and you can see it in them. So I think that this avenue is something we should explore, because that's something that was the missing piece, I thought, in SAIF at the time. But it affects people differently, of course, as we're all affected differently. But, boy, it's pretty hard to get your spirits up when you've lost your five toes and one foot. So.
Right. I appreciate your comments. I think that's one of the reasons this subject matter came up is, you know, these things happen on the job and, you know, there's impacts. And I have talked to the division a little bit about this particular subject matter, and I know it's on MLAC's radar screen, and how we exactly proceed with this task force may be a little bit different than what's in the bill at the moment. But if you could identify yourself for the record, maybe shed some light with any sort of MLAC discussion with
certainly.
This.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Teresa Van Winkle, Senior Policy Advisor for the Department of Consumer Business Services. I also am the administrator for MLAC. At this point, it may not necessitate MLAC review as it is a task force. It does not indirectly impact the system. Any future outcomes, such as legislation, would do that. I do have a meeting later in 2 days with my co-chairs. I do know that, yes, one of the co-chairs has directly expressed support. I believe the other will likely as well. So this actually could be an issue that MLAC could take up as a subcommittee during the interim. It could be something that's internal with DCBS and involvement with MLAC and also our advisory committee, which Dr. Keenan actually is a member of. So there are a couple of avenues that we could look into this issue without formal legislation.
Great. Thank you, Representative Kinnemer.
Thank you. Just to follow up on your comments, something that would be very helpful to me is to have at least some preliminary statement from MLAC about this. I'm uncomfortable going down this route. And as a mental health person, I certainly think there's a gigantic need. But it's a difficult thing to figure out how you balance that and how you manage that. And, you know, there's been a discussion already here that's a difficult one. When is it a result of an injury and when is it a personal issue, or how did the two fit, and all kinds of, I mean, there are some very complicated questions that emerge here, and the costs quickly become a serious factor as well as the need and how you balance that. This is really, in my mind, a very ticklish issue, and I'm dancing, feeling very uncomfortable because I certainly have strong feelings on all sides of this.
It's, I was to say, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Kinnemer, yes, I think from talking to my co-chairs in regards to this issue, I think at the very least, even if there is not a formal review or formal recommendation, I do believe that they will put something on the record in regards to this. So the fact that it's not, may not be under like formal review does not mean that they're dismissing the issue at all. So I'll make that clear.
And certainly that's why this bill is a task force,
yes,
and not implementing some.
I think that's a great idea, Mr. Chair.
But I think that the MLAC advisory medical advisory committee with Dr. Keenan on it has expressed an interest in having this discussed, and I think we may end up fall short of having an official legislation on this if we can get a commitment from MLAC that they will look at this in the interim with eyes on potential changes. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just follow up on what Representative Kinnemer and actually Representative Barreto were kind of hitting on this tricky subject on dealing with everything with the mental health, but it also falls into what we're doing with the wraparound services with CCOs and everything. I think it's something we really need to look at. So if we could get some sort of official, because I think a task force could be very useful and helpful to MLAC on making a decision. So if MLAC could say, hey, we would really like to have this task force put together, it would be very, very helpful for us.
Thank you. Not seeing any other questions. Are you have final comment? Look like you were ready to speak.
Chair Hovey, I just wanted to say that one thing we like about the task force is having legislators on it, that often having legislative involvement means that whatever comes out of it has a better chance of coming to fruition.
Thank you. I appreciate that input, and certainly our committee will take it under advisement.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Not seeing anyone else signed up to speak to House Bill 3026. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3026. We are not going to work House Bill 2386 today, but I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2765. I did say work session.
Work session. Yes. 2765. Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure prohibits greyhound racing or the operation of public training tracks or public kennels for greyhounds that participate in race meets. There is a proposed -1 amendment before you that just clarifies that any former Greyhound race meet licensee that is retaining any unclaimed winnings, that they forward the money to the Oregon Racing Commission as opposed to the state treasurer, as the bill states. And the funds do go to the general fund if there are any unclaimed winnings. On that -1 amendment, there is a minimal revenue impact that just came in this morning. It said that the amounts could not be determined, but it's likely it would be a minimal revenue impact. And on the -1, there is no fiscal impact.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, would you like the -1?
Please.
Chair Holby, I move the -1 amendments be adopted into House Bill 2765.
Representative Barton moves the -1 amendments be adopted to House Bill 2765. Discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
On the amendment?
Yes.
Representative Widener.
Because this amendment, actually just saw, I didn't really understand the full reason of it, but it's just to take any money that's left at the Kennel Club and it wouldn't be dispersed amongst the owners, and the state is going to lay claim on that?
Yep. Jan, go ahead and explain it.
Yes, the bill was written such that any unclaimed earnings or monies held by licensees of the Racing Commission, that money would be forwarded to the Oregon State Treasury for deposit into the general fund. The amendment is to clarify that the money is to go to the Racing Commission as opposed to the Treasury, then into the for purposes of being deposited into the general fund.
Mr.
And the amendment came at the request of the treasurer to clarify that they are not generally the recipient of those funds directly. They are just passing them through to the general fund.
Thank you.
I guess my question, why wouldn't we let the licensees or the people involved in the track keep the funds themselves, the unclaimed funds?
Well, I don't have that amendment before me right now, and so this is the amendment we already have. So, and it was just a clarification in the original bill.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Representative Barton.
Perhaps a question of Jan. Now, I'm going to guess, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but it seems a good guess that this is a theoretical dispute. After 10 or 20 years, there can't really be any money left of this of note, is there?
It seems that's the case. The revenue analyst said that any funds couldn't be determined, but likely to be a minimal revenue impact.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, would Mr. Forey and Mr. Beckstead like to come up?
And also,
Mike Dewey.
Mike Dewey. You might as well come up, too.
He would probably know.
Just don't throw any punches. good morning. I don't know, Mr. Kaforia, you want to address the -1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kaforia, representing Gray 2 KUSA. This amendment did not come from us, came from the treasurer's office. It's purely a technical issue that really has no effect at all in the real world. It's just, I guess they wanted to set a precedent because every other time there's some place that money comes that goes through this process, it doesn't change anything. I called the Racing Commission to find out, and they said there's a 90-day term limit on how long they keep that money. So this has been closed for 10 years. There isn't any money. This bill, it really makes no difference at all whether you pass the amendment or don't pass the amendment, frankly. The Treasury would feel better because it makes all the statutes line up in the same way. That's the only thing it does.
Thank you. Mr. Dewey?
Mike Dewey, for the record, I'll give you some background because I've represented the racing industry for quite some time. After 90 days, if a ticket is not claimed, the money goes to the general fund. I think this is just a technical amendment to ensure how the money gets to the state treasurer. And I would surmise that it would affect Portland Meadows in the sense that it would be the same chain of command. So it's I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's just a technical amendment.
Thank you. Other questions? Is there any objection to adopting the dash one amendment? Seeing none, the dash one amendment is adopted to House Bill 2765. Representative Barham, a motion to the floor.
Very well, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2765 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 2765 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative Doherty.
Thank you. I think the one thing about this bill, this is a solution looking for a problem. We haven't had dog racing in Oregon in 10 years. And so I look at this, I mean, I'm really torn on how I'm going to vote on this thing, because to me this is a cleanup bill. This is not a commentary on how you treat greyhounds. It is not a commentary on gambling. It's not a commentary on organizations. It's just simply the track no longer exists. Greyhound racing has not existed in the state for a long time. And so to characterize this as a humane bill, that is, you know, the savior of animals and this kind of thing, would absolutely be wrong and untruthful. To me, this is a bill that is a cleanup. We don't have dog racing. Dog racing is never going to come back. And so to me, it's a cleanup bill. It's not a commentary on how we treat animals, period.
Representative, anybody else with a question? Was that Representative Widener? Question? Comment? Discussion?
Comment. Discussion. And actually, if it would be okay if I asked a question to Mr. Dewey, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
So, Mike, we heard in testimony from the Humane Society that the animals were basically being killed and all kinds of other things and thrown into dumps and different things. Can you describe the process or what happened with the animals at the track? I mean, were the adoption process, things like that, how the animals were treated when the track was open? Give us a little background on that.
Mr. Chair, I'll do this very quickly. I was not able to be at the first hearing. My doctor, after surgery and some other events, was not allowing me to be here. And
we're glad you're here, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
My interest is personal in the sense that my father and our family were deeply involved in Multnomah Greyhound Park, in the sense that my father, for 30 years, was the president. And a number of legislators, lobbyists, staff had worked at Multnomah Greyhound Park. And we were, if not the first, the second or third track to adopt a program for the safety and the welfare of the animals. And the track put the money into that program, had full-time staff, and it was not only adopt a greyhound program, but it was to follow the animal all the way through the process. And it was a fabulous program. So if the testimony is about the treatment of animals at Multnomah Greyhound Track, that is not true. Now, there are issues that you have in horse racing and greyhound racing. But if that's the issue, then I get very concerned. I do appreciate what Representative Doherty said, is that somebody may say, well, the reason we closed this track is because of the treatment of the animals. And hopefully that's not the case. I do have a concern, because I do represent Portland Meadows, that this is going to be the next step. So that's a concern we have. Also, and this is just technical, we have these wagering hubs, which are fantastic in the state of Oregon. And they take wagers for horse racing and greyhound racing around the world. So you can make a wager at home on the internet at another track, for example, if you're at Portland Meadows, you can make a wager on the Kentucky Derby. Now, this is just technical because we haven't looked at it, whether or not they could take greyhound wagering, because they take that, these wagering hubs take those wagers around the world. And it is money that goes to the general fund. Now, we haven't looked at that technically. It just came to mind just a few days ago as I was thinking about this bill. But my concern is this is going to be about a statement, and I'm concerned about that. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Beckstead, you want to make any comments about the conversation?
Thank you, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, Scott Beckstead, Oregon State Director and Western Regional Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee today. Commercial greyhound racing is, in the eyes of the Humane Society of the United States and every other major animal welfare organization, inhumane. This position is based entirely on industry standard practices designed to secure the highest return from each individual dog while incurring the least amount of cost. These standard practices have been extensively documented through state records, mainstream news reports, and confirmed by the industry itself. A few points. One, commercial dog racing requires the breeding of a large number of dogs. More than 80,000 young greyhounds have entered the racing industry since 2008. Two, a significant number of greyhounds die on the track. In Florida, according to state records, a racing greyhound dies every 3 days on the average. Three, greyhounds endure lives of confinement kept in warehouse-style kennels for long hours each day. Four, an industrial pesticide called Termidor is used throughout the industry as a flea and tick repellent. Five, female greyhounds are given anabolic steroids to block their natural reproductive cycles. Six, racing greyhounds are fed a diet based on rejected 4D meat. This is the meat of down, dying, diseased, and dead animals deemed unfit for human consumption. According to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, this meat is a potential health hazard to both greyhounds and human handlers. Seven, a large number of greyhounds suffer serious injuries. Since 2008, nearly 12,000 greyhound injuries have been documented nationwide, including more than 3,000 greyhounds that suffered broken legs. Although we know a lot about this industry, there are also some things that we don't know. For instance, the fate of all the greyhounds registered to race is not something the industry or state agencies monitor. According to a 2011 email from National Greyhound Association Executive Director Gary Guccione, there are no national statistics on the ultimate fate of greyhounds that leave the racing industry. The adoption numbers that the industry claims to be true are simply made up. Only one state, Iowa, reports detailed data on the number of greyhound puppies that are born and registered to race. Using average litter sizes figures provided by the National Greyhound Association, an estimated 493 greyhound puppies simply disappeared from record between the years 2006 and 2008. This is a much larger percentage than any natural attrition rate. Finally, I would like to address the claim that Multnomah Greyhound Park was a model track before its closure a decade ago. That statement is simply not supported by the facts. In reality, Multnomah Greyhound Park had a long history of documented humane problems. One, during the 27-week season at Multnomah Greyhound Park in 2001, 80 injuries were reported to the Oregon Racing Commission. Of these, 27 were confirmed broken bones, including at least 17 broken legs. Other injuries included a possible fracture, two re-injured fractures, lacerations, puncture wounds, and paralysis. Two, during the 2000 season, 107 greyhound injuries were reported at Multnomah Greyhound Park, including dogs that suffered broken legs, lacerations, and other broken bones. Three, in August 2003, two greyhounds died while being transported from Multnomah Greyhound Park to Oklahoma. Four, in October 1999, six dogs died while being transported from Multnomah Greyhound Park to a Florida dog track. Five, in August of 2001, a veterinarian at Multnomah Greyhound Park resigned after a dog collapsed during a race. The veterinarian, who was required to be present during races, had left the track to go to the grocery store. And finally, six, in April of 2002, an Oregon Greyhound breeder lost his license in a suspected case of live lure training with rabbits. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I do have a question.
Representative Doherty.
Okay. Have you ever been to Multnomah Kennel Club?
Chair Holvey, Representative Doherty, I have not.
Okay, I have, and have known a lot of dog owners, and was not as involved as an owner, but involved there as a person that went a long time, and it's just too bad that you did not go to Multnomah Kennel Club to see what it was like.
Other questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott, I mean, it's a little tough when you haven't been there and seen what's went on. and then when you came in and you lied to us earlier with your testimony for us to believe.
You are out of order.
Oh, he's not.
You cannot impugn somebody's integrity by saying they are a liar. He may interpret facts differently than others, but you do not call people liars in this committee.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. It was just what we found when we checked with Florida and the Florida legislature on what the laws were and what we were told.
All the same, I think he can produce documents and have his own opinion on what those and his interpretation of those documents. It is not for you to interpret those documents and call him a liar. I will not stand for this in this committee.
So, sorry, Mr. Chair. May I proceed?
I'm going to stand in recess. Stand in recess. I'd like to reconvene the House Committee on Business and Labor.
Chair, we're still in work session, are we not?
We are still in work session on House Bill 2765.
Chair Holvey, I would like to withdraw my motion to move 2765 to the floor.
Representative Barton moves to withdraw his motion on House Bill 2765. Is there any objection to the withdrawal of the motion? Not seeing any, the motion's withdrawn, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2765.
2805.
I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2921. Mm-hmm.
Chair and committee members, this measure was before you on the 23rd of February. It's a measure that authorizes the Commissioner of Labor and Industries to use the Wage Security Fund to administer and enforce laws governing wages, hours, and employment conditions. There is no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement issued, and Legislative Fiscal Office requests a referral to Ways and Means on this. The committee has no amendments before it.
Thank you. Representative Barton, a motion on House Bill 2921 with a subsequent Ways and Means, please.
Chair Holvey, I move House Bill 2921 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Subsequent referral will be added to, the bill will be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 2921 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. With a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion? Not seeing any. Matthew, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Beretta?
Aye.
Representative
Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Eskimo?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, what did you say, me? We reprimand.
Aye.
Representative
Nelson? Bring it back down.
Yes.
Get to vote on something.
Wyden? No.
Vice Chair Martin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Penimer?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2921's passed. Moves to Ways and Means. Committee on Ways and Means. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2921. Jan, where are we at with paperwork on House Bill 2805?
We do not have the fiscal statement.
So with that, committee, I will carry over the work session on House Bill 2805, and I will carry over the work session on House Bill 2386. And I believe that concludes our business. Anything else for good of the order? Not seeing any, I'll close the House Committee on Business and Labor.